So this is the fourth and, to my mind, final talk on the Scripture of Great Wisdom, at least for this series. And I know, let's say, not all of you would have heard the dedication I gave at the altar to start our morning ceremony. What I said for the dedication will tie into how I want to start at this point, and then I'll bring in some of those elements too. Some of you may remember some months ago, could be like 12 months. Yeah, I'm not remembering exactly when it was. We were looking at one of the chapters in the Shobo Genzo, Great Master Dogen's major work. And it was actually the first chapter in the Shobo Genzo, which is, according to the monk who had written the book, he says it's basically you can understand the whole Shobo Genzo by that first chapter. And in it, Great Master Dogen basically says that a human being is the intersection of individuality and universality. And to my mind, that's a really, really good description, one of many descriptions. That's a really nice description of what I was mentioning during the dedication, that we have the teaching in Buddhism that we have two minds, and one that we tend to operate from most of the time is our individual mind, or the mind that basically objectifies everything, kind of our everyday, ordinary mind. And it subsequently discriminates, and I use the word discrimination in a very neutral way. That's a ripe apple, that's an apple that's rotten, and I better not eat it, or I better cut out the rotten bits. That's discriminating, and probably a good thing. And that right there, to my mind, is indicative of why we have that mind as human beings. We needed to be able to do things like that. That's a tiger, and that's a, what's something else that's cute and cuddly and safe?
Bunny rabbit.
A bunny rabbit. Okay. Things of that sort. So I wanted to use that lens of the two minds to look at the remainder of the Scripture of Great Wisdom. And I think it just adds to the, the previous comments I've been making in, the past Sundays that we've been talking about it. So in order to experience Buddha mind, the mind in which we know, see everything as one. And when I say experience, there's just this knowing kind of at a visceral level that everything that we experience is not separate from us. We can use our discriminating mind and study things like ecology, and our research, our findings show that everything is interconnected and everything is, part of a whole system. But that's very different than actually directly experiencing that wholeness and that oneness and acting from that direct understanding. We usually have to do things like modeling or crunching numbers, something of that sort, to say, oh, this is what we should do to keep, the ecosystem healthy. That's the everyday mind, the discriminating mind. Buddha mind is simply one with everything and simply acts within that context. So in order to, back step again here, we are most familiar with, everyday mind. In order to experience and allow Buddha mind to become much more present in our lives, we need to, as Great Master Dogen says in Rules for Meditation, he says, do not think, do not try not to think, just sitting with no deliberate thought is the important aspect of serene reflection meditation, the practice to awaken, to find Buddha mind. When thoughts come up, when we're meditating or throughout the day, when things come up, thoughts come up, we can acknowledge them and say, yes, 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 I know everyday mind, you exist. I know you're there, but I'd like the space to find Buddha mind. It's very, very important that we actually find a balance between those two things. And a number of commentators, including the person who wrote the book about the first chapter of the Shobogenzo, is basically saying that it's because we keep operating from this ordinary daily mind, everyday mind, that the world is in the situation it's in right now. So what I wanted to do was, like, if we go to the middle of page 2 in the scripture book, and for those of you on Zoom who don't have it in front of you, I'll definitely go ahead and read it. But I wanted to point out that, so for example, without saying the first part of the line, there's sensation, thought, activity, consciousness, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. And then there's, just jumping ahead from that, then there's the talking about knowledge. There's talking about ignorance. There's talking about old age and death. A little bit further down, there's talking about annihilation, and then knowledge and attainment. So the reason we know what all of those terms are is because of our discerning, discriminating mind. That's the language of that mind. And that's the perspective, that's the understanding from that everyday mind. From everyday mind, we want to be more knowledgeable in various areas. We don't want to be ignorant. We want to attain things and so on. Now, what's interesting is when it mentions, form, sensation, thought, activity, and consciousness, and then all of the senses, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, the scripture is presenting it in a very, very generalized way to cover everybody. But what's really important is that from our everyday mind perspective, we have our own unique form. We have the sensations and thoughts and activities that are unique to us. And what that's implying is that we can kind of bundle that all together. And from everyday mind, we all have our own story that we call our life. So that's what that everyday mind does. It gives us a story. And that's the way, actually, it needs a story, or mini stories, if you will, kind of moment to moment actually function. But until we start experiencing Buddha mind, well, one thing is we have to, to rely one degree or another on what the teachings are saying, namely that there is something other than everyday mind that each and every one of us possess, or that each and every one of us can attain or experience. And until we actually start touching that and experiencing it, even to a small degree, we still keep thinking that our story and how we perceive reality through our senses. Our senses, that's the way things are. That's the way reality really is. And it is from that mind's perspective. But then when you experience Buddha mind, then you get what's actually stated in those lines I just went through. There isn't any form, there isn't any, no sensations, no thoughts, no activity or consciousness. There aren't the six senses, knowledge, ignorance, attainment, none of those are relevant either. None of those are important either. There's no old age, there's no death, there's no birth. And if you're like me, I'm not sure quite the way to say it, but it's like from everyday mind, it's like, well, that's just inconceivable. It's inconceivable, and you can turn one of two ways. I want to keep doing this business. I want to keep doing this practice with the hope that someday I will experience Buddha mind, or it's like, it's inconceivable. Therefore, well, what's being said is a load of bunk. And, you know, no thanks. I'm out of here. Maybe that's a little bit too black and white, but I think what I find interesting is that I encounter quite often, and interestingly enough, from people my age or older, give or take, when I give meditation instruction and hopefully convey that you can just let your thoughts and your feelings, etc., just come and go. You know, don't worry about that. It's interesting to see, it's like, well, but I need to understand things. Or there's a sense of I have to do things a certain way. That's everyday mind again talking. And that's looping us right back into everyday mind again. You know, and again, I mean, it's fair enough. I mean, we have to feel comfortable about kind of our walking, you know, forward in our practice. But I remember as a novice monk working in the guest department, and I was an older novice, so I was getting to the point where I was given more responsibility and actually had to talk to people, guests and so on. And given my everyday mind, I was very concerned about, you know, what am I going to say? I need to, how am I going to present the teachings and so on? And, oh, maybe I need to write a whole bunch of notes. And I don't know, maybe I didn't go this far, but maybe I need to have a big stack of index cards in my back pocket that I whip out when a certain question comes up. And over and over again, somebody would just, some lay guest would bump into me in the cloister or in the guest house, and just, you know, they just asked something. And I would just be able to answer them on the spot. And Reverend Master Daishin, the vice abbot down at Shasta, told this beautiful story once of back in the old days, whenever anybody came to the monastery, had a meal, they would all do the formal bowl set meals with the monks. And there's quite a procedure for doing that. And this one fellow came, and I'm not quite sure the situation, but there wasn't enough time to explain to him roughly what to do. So he just got plunked down in his spot and had a bowl set put down in front of him. And Reverend Master Daishin kind of looked out of the corner of his eye, and he was making a complete mess of the way you actually do it. But he was doing the practice, the meditation, beautifully. He was just simply being with what was there, you know, I guess kind of look around and sort of do things. it's already happened to all of us, and it's going to continue to happen to all of us, that we will find ourselves in situations where it's completely unexpected. Now what? Trust your Buddha mind. How do you trust your Buddha mind? Meditate. You know, what does that word mean to you? How do you do that? It's sort of different for each and every one of us. And I use certain words that work for me. Buddha mind is already everything that's happening. It's the whole thing. If we can do that which doesn't sort of peel us off from, pull ourselves back from just the everything that's there, there will simply be a knowingness of what to do. And I'll quickly interject that that knowingness of what to do, you won't know what it is to do, you'll just do it. And afterwards, as has been the case for myself, you're quite surprised at the fact that you did what you did. So I think the role of what a monk, a teacher, is to kind of keep bringing up, keep pointing out that there is this second mind, there is this Buddha mind, and it's there anytime you wish to access it, and that you can trust it. And there are just all sorts of ways that I can, teachers can, you know, point to in terms of, well, you know, try this a little bit more. Go in this direction just a little bit more. And again, you know, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, you know, form, sensation, thought, activity, and consciousness. It's each one of us has our own unfolding, has our own story. We have our own unique ways that are already perfectly in harmony with Buddha mind. And we have other areas that are works in progress. So looking again at final few sentences in the Scripture of Great Wisdom, as was brought up last time, in the mind of the Bosatsu — Bosatsu is the Japanese way of saying Bodhisattva — in the mind of the Bodhisattva who is truly one with wisdom great, the obstacles dissolve. And going on beyond this human mind, one is nirvana. Going beyond this human mind, going beyond the everyday mind, accessing, experiencing Buddha mind. The thing about having a story is that almost by definition, it's a description of a limitation. You know, I'm short or I'm tall. You know, the minute you have a certain aspect of a story, that implies it's not these other things. Trying to think of some things that people have brought up with me in the past, you know, thinking back decades too. You know, I can't meditate because my mind is too busy. That's an aspect of one's story, that I'm just like this busy mind, or I have certain desires or greeds or certain aversions. We have in, oh boy, I always keep, can't remember if it's Sandokaya, the most excellent mirror samadhi, but it says, all things herein contain inherent great potentiality. That potentiality, one aspect of it is saying that everything has Buddha mind. And because we have Buddha mind, we may have a story, but we can just put it down anytime we want. And that inherent great potentiality is we can actually, in the next moment, in the next thing that we do or say or think, doesn't have to be connected with or restrained or constrained by that past. You know, I guess what just came to mind is like, well, somebody could say, I'm just always a grumpy person. The story, A Christmas Carol, comes to mind. I'm a Scrooge, or I'm a Grinch. So what's actually happening then is that when we're truly one with wisdom great, when we touch, access, experience that Buddha mind, the obstacles dissolve. And I think the, you know, the structure of that phrase, the obstacles dissolve, it means every obstacle. In other words, we can just step into complete newness in the next moment. We're not constrained by anything. And the phrase comes up, we may think we are. And I'm like, yep, that's how it works every time. If we think we are, then we've just gone back into everyday mind. We've gone back into this story. We've gone back into, you know, this world is a collection of all these different objects. Going beyond this human mind, one is nirvana. I kind of like the way it's presented there in that, you know, the way Shohaku Okamura mentions it in the book on Dogen, where he says, Dogen says that human beings are the intersection of individuality and universality. I kind of like it in the sense of going on beyond this human mind. In other words, it's take another step. You're always going to have your human everyday mind. We actually need it to function as an everyday human. And that's both the means we have of making a mess of the world. It's also what we have for making the garden of the bodhisattvas. So it's like, to me, it's sort of, I guess the intersection implies that we have choice. We can remain with everyday mind, or we can take to heart what Buddhism is pointing to and saying, oh, I think I might try to see about this Buddha mind thing that they're talking about. So when you go beyond this human mind and, as it were, become nirvana, experience nirvana, that's a Buddha. All the Buddhas, true of present, past, and future, so all of the Buddhas throughout all times, says they are, all of them are. That's echoing the sentence above that, where it says, going on beyond this human mind, one is nirvana. And the use of the verb to be is, it's a distinction from you are Buddha mind, you are the one, you know, you are the whole. You're not experiencing it, you are it. Because in order to experience something, there has to be something that experiences. And the something that experiences is separate from the thing that it's experiencing. So they're trying to be as careful as they can and just saying, describing that state of Buddha mind, it's just a state of oneness, of just simply being. One's skandhas are still there and perfectly functional, but there isn't a me there. In other words, there isn't a separate thing that's saying, oh, I'm experiencing nirvana or I'm experiencing enlightenment. There just simply is enlightenment. And again, it's kind of emphasizing, restating the Buddhas are nirvana, are one, because they're relying on great wisdom, because they're relying on Buddha mind. The next few lines are, you know, the Prajna Paramita, i.e. the scripture of great wisdom, we should know is the greatest, most important, you know, mantra, writing, teaching in Buddhism. And then they say it's the highest and most peerless. It allays, it alleviates all pain. And what's being implied there is, you know, the pain that we, from our everyday mind, it's not talking about there's no pain anymore in the sense of physical pain or emotional pain. It's just that we don't regard it as a pain anymore. It is simply, you know, the unfolding of what is there within the oneness of everything. It's, in other words, it's not a problem anymore that needs to be solved or gotten rid of or dealt with. It becomes something that's there within the context that we interact with and do things with. And then again, it is the very truth. What's being stated is true. This is the mantra of great wisdom here, exclamation point. You know, listen. And the very last line, the last sentence, two lines, is very, very famous. Now, so just a few lines above, it's actually stated that when you experience Buddha mind, when there is Buddha mind, when you're one with Buddha mind, when you is or when you are Buddha mind, you are Buddha at that moment when that is occurring. And then it states kind of the real key to the practice. It says, O Buddha, by the way, okay, you're experiencing Buddha mind, you are Buddha mind, keep going. Yes, that moment, and that moment can be days, it can be weeks, it can be a year or more, and then things change. Keep going. In other words, the next moment arises, it presents itself, its own unique situation. Everyday mind or Buddha mind? You're at the intersection. What are you going to choose? And so it's partly saying that a Buddha does keep going on beyond. It's also saying, as a reminder, as a teaching, keep going and always keep going on beyond. And it's like every moment that we meet as best we can with Buddha mind is Buddha. And this is where, oh, before I say that, and as, you know, as one monk said at one point, with that teaching, and they said, and don't forget the hail, you know, at the very end, hail, hail, hail. Just the, I guess we don't really quite do that in our culture that much, hailing. But again, it's sort of an expression of what exaltation. It goes together with when you find yourself in a very challenging situation and you're able which I'll talk about here in just a minute, but you're able to meditate with it, be with it, try to be more one with it. There is sort of an exaltation, there's a joy, there's a, you know, kind of a magnificence that comes from that too, to actually, even in a very small way, to actually behave, respond in a way that's different than you normally respond or behave. And it would be really cool if there were some beings that suddenly materialized around you when you chose to, oh, I'm not going to do that. I feel like I want to. I'm not going to. Or no, I'm too shy, or I'm too afraid, but I will speak up, or I will do this. And it'd be really cool if these beings were suddenly to say, well, what they say is Buddha bows to Buddha and Buddha recognizes Buddha. That's a Buddha act to do that. That's partaking of Buddha mind. When you do just that one small thing of refraining from an old habit, either to not do it or to do something, depending on what your habits are. It's always becoming Buddha, but similar to the use of the verb to be, it's also being Buddha. That's the activity of Buddha, which we have to choose, you know, step by step, moment to moment. So, and I think to kind of round this out, kind of bring it around to, again, the real practicality of our practice. And that is that, okay, everyday mind. Oh, and I just reminded myself to remember to interject here that, again, some months ago, I had started a talk and I was reading from an article Reb Master Hario wrote many, many years ago. And what he was talking about, the mind of duality, and just this whole, you know, area that we sometimes refer to as duality. And that, again, is just another way of saying everyday mind, the mind that discriminates, the mind that sees objects and then puts them into categories of good and bad, right and wrong, and so on, you know, of judging things, assessing things in different ways. So everyday mind, dual mind, mind of duality, human mind, and then Buddha mind. Not surprisingly, the things that allow us to access Buddha mind are the things that are kind of opposite the things that access everyday mind. And everyday mind is a busy mind, or everyday person is a busy person. Busy doing more than one thing at a time. I can teasingly look at the Zoom screen and see some of you that have blanked out screens. And I'm like, are you just sitting there listening, or are you drinking something or eating something? Or you're probably not listening to something else also. But I confess I've done that before too. You know, and this kind of brings up things that we talked about, I guess it was last month during discussion. You know, if you're doing one thing, and even though it's a simple thing, but you're also doing something else, that's just making you busier. And sort of in conjunction with that, there's busier, and then there's just a lot of noise going on. You know, again, noise in the technical sense. Maybe very nice noise, music or something of that sort, or voices. But again, it's the moreness of it. It involves If we're listening to something, we have to use our minds to understand what's being said. So Buddha mind needs less busyness to awaken and arise. It needs quietness. And again, these are all in conjunction with everyday mind. What is noisy or busy in terms of everyday mind? It's going to be different for each one of us. Reverend Master Daizui, when we were out at Fugen Hermitage, oftentimes we'd be out during, well, not all the time, but sometimes out during the colder part of the year, and we heated with a wood stove, and he would spend the evenings, when we weren't formally meditate, he would spend it just sitting quietly, silently in front of the wood stove. Until it finally dawned on me, something's going on here. He's actually, it's not quite the right word, but he's actually doing something, or he's allowing something. Or in the warmer time of the year, we had outside near our goldfish pond and little fountain, we had a big screen house. It's very mosquito-y once the sun went down. So we had to have a screen house, but he'd go and just sit out there for hours. I would oftentimes do what became my equivalent, which was, we had a cat, lovely kitty, who lived out there with us, and I would just, she'd just sit on my lap. We'd just sit there together, and just, I'd pet her occasionally, but cats eventually, it's like, okay, you don't need to keep petting her, but she just wanted to sit there. So we just sit there together quietly. So if you've got kitties, do that. And Great Master Dogen says, should you be able to drop off body and mind naturally, the Buddha mind will immediately manifest itself. He's talking about dropping off the body and mind of everyday mind. Don't do the everyday mind stuff all the time. Pause. Allow there to be space between you and everyday mind. Buddha mind's already there. We don't have to create it. We just have to do things in our lives which indicate we're actually willing and open to letting it come in, experiencing it more. And I guess the last thing that comes to mind to offer, I've got a very, very good friend, good Dharma friend in the UK, a layperson, and he once mentioned to me years and years ago when I was over at Throstle, he said that he noticed that he felt that the real meditation was going on when, before the meditation period started, he'd just go and sit on his cushion. And, maybe 5 minutes later, the gong would ring to start meditation. And when the gong rung, it's like, what would come up is, oh, now I need to meditate. And there's a certain way I'm supposed to be doing it. And there's, oh, I need to pay attention. And, oh, am I holding on to this thought or that thought? Or, oh, I need to put it down. That's all just everyday mind again. And so he noticed that prior to the gong ringing, that was actually more the business. And so he learned to some degree, as I have too, just ignore the gong. Just carry on. Just sit there. Just be yourself. So don't worry about it. Don't sweat it. Continue to be still, quiet. Occasionally bring up that desire you wish to experience Buddha mind. And then just allow yourself to just sit there and be. And don't forget the hail. Okay, I officially declare my four-part talk on the Scripture of Great Wisdom done.